Good afternoon and welcome to The Weekend. And joining us on The Weekend today is Dr. Gregory Rocha. Dr. Gregory Rocha, political science professor here on campus and, of course, not a stranger to KTEP. He's been with us visiting many times during pledge drive and also during election time. And it seems like, gosh, just yesterday was the presidential election 4 years ago, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Louie. And you're right, time flies. There's no doubt about it.
So this has been a very interesting campaign, and you've been to the caucuses before in New Hampshire and in Iowa. And so tell us a little bit about, first of all, when this crazy campaign started, there were what, I think, nine Republican candidates?
Actually, there were 17.
17, okay, wow.
And it just kind of whittled down, and that's part of the primary process that you can find that one person who ultimately becomes the party's nominee.
Now, what were the political pundits saying about when Donald Trump announced? Were they taking him seriously? And you as a political scientist, what did you think?
Yeah, I don't think overall there wasn't – he wasn't taking all that seriously, that there were other more established people like Jeb Bush or Chris Christie or people who have a record of getting elected into office and service in the Republican Party or Democratic Party for that matter, and that they would be the ones who get the nomination. We saw that happen with Hillary Clinton. Again, her time with the Democratic Party is pretty longstanding. But then, of course, we had all the phenomenon of going on with Donald Trump. And really, Louie, kind of taking a step back from that, you can see that here are two political parties both trying to figure out where they're going to go in the future, because there are obviously very strong challenges in each party.
One of the things that people have brought up in the past, Greg, is the fact that the Republican Party, particularly, for so many years it was labeled as, you know, this is a party for rich people. This is a party for, you know, non-minorities. Minorities usually went with the Democratic Party. And that was one of the situations, I believe, that you discussed back when Mitt Romney was running against President Obama, that the fact that the Latino vote wasn't really there for what everyone expected.
That was true then, and it looks like it's not going to be the case now. The public opinion polls just show Latino support for Republicans fairly small. The one group who's holding fairly strongly with the party are, and within the Latino coalition are the Cuban Americans, who strongly have been members of and affiliated with the Republican Party for well over 50 years since they started to come into the country in broad numbers. But as many people have said, the demographics are such that some way, somehow, the party has to figure out how to reconfigure itself and how to make itself more appealing to growing groups in society here.
And so what happens, because you and I have both heard people saying, you know, I'm not even sure if I'm going to vote this election because I don't like the choices. So what happens when something like that, what would you all call it as a political scientist, when somebody doesn't vote or they just write in their vote and...
You know, the term I think that's used in political science is detachment, that whomever it is that is running for office, they're just not like me. And they're not you know, from my group, or I don't represent or identify with them. And just now, Louie, just before I came into the studio, I took a look at the latest public opinion polling about presidential elections. And both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have unfavorability ratings in the 60%. You know, we've never seen that with two major candidates. And whether or not people don't vote, or perhaps they'll vote for one of the other third parties, is something to be seen. But you can see that both of these candidates are struggling to try to, you know, build that coalition that helps them win the election, as well as not just their election, but for their political party.
And one forgets also, as you just mentioned, their political party, because there are a lot of seats up also in Congress and in the Senate, and a lot of people are, you know, that's going to be very important as well.
That's true. And particularly in the Senate, where the Democrats need to pick up five votes, or I should say five Senate seats, in order to become the majority. One of the things that we've noticed happening, particularly among incumbent Republican senators who are in tight races, is to say that, you know, I may not necessarily support Donald Trump, but vote for me even if you need a check on Hillary Clinton should she become president of the United States. And that seems to be working well in states like Florida, where Marco Rubio is, or New Hampshire, where Kelly Ayotte is, or in Ohio, where Rob Portman is. And perhaps that strategy of detaching myself from the presidential candidate can help the Republicans maintain their majority in the Senate.
Now, what about the conventions are not what they used to be? Remember that we used to watch the conventions and there was always a suspense as to who was going to be nominated and, you know, what was the roll call and who was the vice presidential candidate going to be? And all that has changed.
That's true, Louie. That happened really after the 1968 presidential election when you'll remember at the Chicago convention, there was all this turmoil and rioting in the streets and just arguing and screaming back and forth among the Democrats. And then both parties realized that we have to open up opportunities for more people to have a say in who becomes our party's nominee for president. And the way to do that has been through primaries and caucuses so that support for candidates are apportioned as they go through the primary process. So that by the time we get to the conventions, there's not much doubt about who's going to be the party's nominee for president. And we might have seen it happen somewhat with the Republicans when there was concern about some people in the GOP trying to change things so that Trump wouldn't get the nomination. But that didn't happen. So that was the drama, not necessarily who would be the party's nominee.
And one of the situations that we've dealt with this week is the situation with Secretary of State Clinton, who fell ill at the 9/11 memorial. And so some people are concerned about the health of her and what would happen. Let's put the scenario in. If for some reason she were to be too sick and that she would drop out, what would happen or what are the situations? I mean, history has never seen anything like this, right? Except for, gosh, I guess when Robert Kennedy was assassinated because he was going to be the nominee.
He was going through the primary process then. But maybe the closest analogy to this, and this really doesn't serve all that well, would have been in 1972 when George McGovern had chosen Ed Muskie to be his vice presidential nominee. But that, you know, there were concerns about Muskie and so forth. So things changed and Sergeant Shriver came in to be the nominee. And then that was pretty much a choice between, the candidate and the party. So that what would happen here with at the very top of the ticket likely would be settled among the leadership within the Democratic Party. And, of course, the logical choice would be Kane. But can you imagine all the turmoil that would create, and it surely wouldn't work well for the Democrats and would almost certainly assure Donald Trump to win the presidency.
And one of the political pundits who's been around for a while in administrations, and Dick Morris, has said that, because some people were thinking about Vice President Biden maybe coming in if Secretary Clinton could not fill that role. And the fact he said that if Biden were to be selected, that Trump would not be able to beat him.
That may or may not be. Again, Louis, he'd have to – he's almost starting over. And granted, everybody knows Joe Biden. But still, he'd have a lot of ground to make up. And maybe he could make it a pretty close race. And again, while we've never really seen this happen before, it just seems that for him, as somebody who needs to build support, has to do so in just a matter of a few weeks, makes it quite the challenge for him, even though I'm sure Democrats around the country would rally for him. But that's not enough, Louis. One thing we know is that there aren't enough Republicans, there aren't enough Democrats to win an election. They have to appeal to independents. And that's the group who Biden would have to appeal to. And could he get through to them in that amount of time? That I think that'd be quite a tough thing to do.
And there have been incidents in the past, and people have mentioned President Kennedy with Addison's disease, FDR with the polio, and then President Reagan. But he did not have Alzheimer's wasn't diagnosed until late in his other second term, correct?
That's right. That's right. And then there was this idea, particularly with Franklin Roosevelt, that you don't let others even get a whiff of his condition, even though everyone knew that he'd been stricken with polio. And you can take a look at photos of him. He's standing upright. You really have to look very closely to see him in braces. And in fact, there were times when his braces were painted black to make it look like, or to make you miss. When you look at him, or cartoons that show him running and so forth, that was rather common. And as we opened up and came to know more about our elected officials, that came to be less and less of an issue. But now here we are in a campaign where it seems as if all the old rules have been set aside. And when you see a weakness in the other candidate, you go after it with everything you've got. And that's what we have here. And so it is that Donald Trump has said, you know, she's not strong enough to stand up to the leadership or to do the work. How does that help him? Well, again, we'll see how that all plays out.
And it comes on the heels also of where Secretary Clinton had to apologize for what she said, that there was a basket full of deplorable people supporting Trump. And then after that is when she fell ill. And then now Donald Trump is saying, well, this is what she said about you people, whatever. And then others are saying, well, that's what you said initially. So this has become a very, very nasty race.
Oh, it is. And we've never seen anything like this. Even back to the last debates, when we saw Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, and once everything was over, they shook hands. And we'd always see these candidates do that. There was a level of civility here, but there just doesn't seem to be that in this case. And that's surely part of the reason why both candidates have such low favorability ratings. And maybe that says something about electioneering and campaigns of the future. And stretching it out even more, Louis, I think if there are those who are looking at elections globally and seeing that some of that civility is lost elsewhere, somewhere like the Philippines, where Mr. Duterte got into office, and he's, pretty rough character, saying some pretty outrageous things now that he's in office. You know, perhaps this is something that extends beyond just the United States itself.
And that's one thing that was brought up earlier in the campaign when Parliament in England was talking about, not supporting Donald Trump. And then there's also been the thing about that Vladimir Putin says that he likes Trump. So it's going back and forth, as you mentioned, globally. What does this mean? And what does the rest of the world think about this race and these candidates?
Oh, I'm sure. And the world watches the election of the American presidency more than any other election worldwide. And Lou, you've seen that there are correspondents from around the world who are here in this country all the time now, just tracking and keeping an eye on what's going on so that they can let their viewers, in the other parts of the world to find out what is going on. So there is something to be said about the importance of the United States and how it is that it has an effect on campaigning elsewhere. And then they're, looking at it a little bit from a more academic point of view. There are those who, such as me, who wonder, do we need to be concerned about elections and how they're conducted, their legitimacy, and so forth. Again, we've heard Mr. Trump, for instance, say, if I lose, it's because things are rigged against me. And there are bound to be those who would accept that. Well, again, we've never heard that from a candidate. And again, the broader question is, what does that do to a population who already has such a low trust in government and politics?
So when the comments that Mr. Trump made about the election being rigged if he loses, some of the members of the Republican Party, the leaders, were saying, look, you shouldn't be saying this because it's already giving us a negative publicity.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, again, thinking about what are the implications of this? This looks to be a pretty close election, and it has been a pretty contentious one. And regardless of who wins, you've got to wonder, what's the mandate given to that person? So that who wins, what are those who supported the other candidate. How much support do they give to this new president? Again, there used to be a time when we would all come together and support that president, give him what's called the honeymoon of a little bit of time. Is that going to happen when this particular election's over? I'm not sure it's going to, Louis. It seems like from day one, regardless of who wins the election, they're going to face strong opposition from the party opposite.
Let's say, for example, that Donald Trump does win the presidency. There have already been negative comments, when he met with Mexico's president. Some of the comments that were coming across social media was the fact that they didn't expect him to actually accept the invitation, and so they have to meet with him anyway. And so because of the comments that he's made about the so-called wall and illegal immigration, immigrants, stuff like that, what kind of reception is that going to have in as far as the U.S. and world countries like, well, Mexico, who is our neighbor?
Again, Louis, that's one of these things we'll have to work out, and particularly, as you said, this important bilateral relationship. One of the things that George W. Bush started with his presidency was that the first foreign official to be invited to the United States would be the Mexican president, which he did with Vicente Fox and so forth. President Obama did the same thing with President Calderon. Should Mr. Trump win the election, would he follow with that tradition of the Mexican president being the first foreign official coming to the White House? And even if he extended the invitation, would the Mexican president accept that offer? Again, well, there's obviously some pretty hard feelings that exist currently in Mexico over all of this.
You mentioned earlier about Cuban Americans supporting the Republican Party, and because of the situation now where Cuba has been opened up. In fact, there was a flight that left for Cuba not too long ago. What does this do as far as our relationship with Cuba regarding whoever the new president is?
It's surely changing. It's opening up a little bit more. And it looks like this is the sort of thing that has traction and is going to continue onward. And therefore, what we'll see probably is a continuation of that. But and how that affects Cuban-American relations is, or I shouldn't say Cuban-Americans here in the United States, is that we have seen ever so slowly an evolution away of Cuban Americans away from the Republican Party, more toward the Democratic Party. And that's something, again, the GOP has to be troubled by.
And there are certain states that traditionally have gone a certain way, and Texas usually goes Republican. But some people are saying that this election is, you know, everything, all the tradition just goes out the window because things have changed so much. In fact, there's been talk about Arizona and what's going to happen there. And you did some research before the interview, and you, as you mentioned earlier, that NBC had released some polls and some of the other things. Tell us about some of these battleground states.
That's pretty interesting, Louis, that we do have some new battleground states, some existing battleground states. There are 19 states that over the past 25 years have voted with the Democratic Party when it comes to the presidency, and for the Republicans, again, over that generation, those six election cycles, 13 states have consistently voted for the GOP. I took a look at them, Louis, and of those states, those 19 Democratic states, the one that seems to have given the most attention in this election is Pennsylvania. And there I just took a look, and Real Clear Politics, which does a pretty good job of assembling, you know, the results from polls, have her up by 6 percentage points right now. So if those hold and she picks up Florida, which again, she's got a slight lead, but there's no guarantee, she could win this presidency. So when we hear people say that she has the easier path to win the election, particularly in the Electoral College, this is what they're talking about. But there are some battleground states, and we'll just have to see. And we've seen that Hillary Clinton hasn't had such a very good month of September here. So, and we still have a ways to go. Who knows what's going to happen? That's why we cast the votes.
And traditionally, Labor Day weekend has been when the campaign kicks off. So this is really going to be these next 2 months are going to be very, very critical for both candidates.
Oh, absolutely so. And not just them, but in the Senate races and House races, so much of it rests on what happens with the presidency, all the strategy, all that's taking place. Will hinge in great part on how the two major party candidates for president handle themselves.
What about the running mates, Mr. Pence and Mr. Kaine? Tell us a little bit about the role and what they carry and why they were selected.
Basically, Louis, they've long been understood to be supporters, that they're not going to upstage the presidential candidates. They're there to provide 100% support for these particular candidates. And in the past, it used to be, Louis, that the vice presidential candidate would be that person who would go on the attack against the other side. And it wouldn't be the presidential candidate who kind of dirties their hands. Well, that's out the window with this particular election. So that what we see, I think, in both Pence and in Kaine are candidates who are there really to kind of buttress and support the presidential candidate. And then one other interesting thing, Louis, and another very important point to consider, and that is that there's a Senate race in Indiana and a Senate race in Virginia that are up in 2016, and we want to make sure that those candidates from their respective parties win in those Senate races.
And as you mentioned, in the past it's been where the vice presidential candidate is kind of, if you want to be the attack dog or whatever. And when Mr. Pence was selected, people were going, wow, this is pretty strange, is what some of the networks were saying, because this has been the tradition in the past, as you mentioned, and Mr. Pence is kind of the opposite of Donald Trump.
Yeah, and in fact, he's something of the calming voice that, you know, again, we might have a presidential candidate who's pretty aggressive and pretty boisterous, but, you know, I'm here and we'll do our best to try to manage things and make sure that we get through and try to win the campaign or ultimately run the nation a particular way, a little bit more orderly than what we might hear on the campaign trail.
And I know in the past you've taught many classes about elections, and your students have also done some exit polls and stuff like that. And I know that, you know, one of the situations that was very intense when political conventions were still suspenseful was the JFK and Johnson, and the fact that there was so much hatred there between Kennedy, well, Robert Kennedy anyway, and Johnson, but they needed him for the South in Texas, correct?
Absolutely so. And they barely won then in 1960. And they were able to hold on in 1964 when the Goldwater nomination came about. But ultimately, of course, and it took some time, as it often does in, you know, these kind of political switches and changes. Now, if there's a state that the Republican Party looks to say that this is our top state, it's Texas, without any question of or doubt, where the jewel in the crown for the Republican Party.
And you mentioned Goldwater and 1964, and what comes to mind is the Daisy commercial. And so tell me a little bit about how you as a political scientist have seen how the political commercials have changed over the years.
Well, it's interesting, Louis. It seems like it's very circular. We're almost back to that right now. If even though Goldwater's name wasn't mentioned in that Daisy commercial, the thought that the commercial was to put into the mind of the viewer was that if you elect Barry Goldwater as president, then we will probably end up in a nuclear war. And maybe many of the viewers have seen that commercial where Hillary Clinton tries to do the same thing with Donald Trump, that it'll take just one thing to set off Trump, and they show him saying different things at various times. And I always thought, Jesus, isn't that so very similar to the Daisy commercial? And in fact, Louis, what, you know, to be honest about this, as you and I have seen, so many commercials now are very negative. There's little, if anything, to say. here's a reason why you should vote for this candidate. Rather, they're attacking one another viciously. And unfortunately, Louis, it works. And it's been going on for some time.
And with social media, the way it is now, people will go to Facebook, they'll go to different websites, and there's so many, not so many objective newscasters anymore, but more people who have their opinion. So if you're conservative, you can listen to a certain commentator. If you're liberal, you can learn a certain commentator. And it just depends on, you know, who you want to watch and what you want to hear.
Yeah, Louis, and there was a time when people were concerned about how much do we need to know? Don't we need to have more sources of information? Well, we have that now. And here we are. You know, we're debating over do we really need all of these sources? Or maybe even more fundamentally, crucially, how does somebody sort through and filter through all that is out there?
And what about one of the things that we talked about before, the fact that with President Obama, a lot of the younger people were out there supporting him. And with this election, they were saying that it was mostly Trump had a lot of not college educated supporters, and that Secretary Clinton had mostly women supporting. So what is the, you know, you and I deal with young people all the time. What role do the young people have in this race?
Well, I think they play a very important role, as they always do. And one of the things about President Obama as a campaigner was that he was able to appeal to younger voters, and did so. And they came out in pretty strong numbers. If memory serves me right, they're about the millennials are about a quarter of the voting age population, and they turned out to be about a quarter of the voters in the election. But just sitting through the class that I'm teaching now in elections and political parties, and having read some of the results that are coming out through these various surveys, the younger voters aren't as enthused. And in fact, they're getting pretty dispirited and becoming more and more cynical and detached about this. And, you know, just kind of anecdotally, I can tell that through our course discussions, in the class, that nobody has much good to say about either candidate. And so we kind of work through that to try to figure out where are we and where's this election going.
And so does that mean that many will stay away from the polls?
Well, it could be that, or it could be that they're attracted to people like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. And, obviously it's in the interest of political parties to make sure that these younger voters get into their party early on so they can stay and be the voters of, you know, the latter generation. So that could be something troubling to both the Democrats and the Republicans. We just don't see that partisan support today among the young.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for being with us here today, and I'm sure that we're going to have another chat shortly before the election or right after. Thank you
Sounds
very
good,
much for
Lee.
Being
thank
with
you.
Us. We've been visiting with Dr. Gregory Rocha from Political Science Department here on campus. The Weekend is taped and produced at KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Vasil Zabanal. Our producer is Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.